Hello and welcome to episode 28 of Talking Dogs. We have a special episode today because we have a special guest, Coach Whitus of the men's soccer team here at Concordia, coming off his 17th season as the head coach. Coach Whitus, thank you for being in the studio here today with us.
Glad to be with you.
Let's get things started, and I know this is something me and Kai talked about all the time, every single episode when we were talking about the men's soccer team and our season updates, our weekly updates. This is the elephant in the room. Set a school and GPAC record with 9 draws on the year. Maybe not the most flattering record, but it does, I think, demonstrate that Concordia was at least competitive in every game, and they certainly don't like losing, I think is what that has to say. What did you make of that, and is that like a, do you have a positive spin on that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the positive spin is just that. Like, we're competitive in every game we play. We don't lose, and we don't lose often. I was talking to a recruit the other day, and they said something about the program they're at, and they had lost like 5 in a row. And I said, well, if you came here, we don't lose 5 in a row. And I looked back, and we just don't. We rarely lose 2 in a row. It's very rare we lose 3 in a row. So this team was just very competitive in that regard, and you know, we found a way, whether we were down a goal, and we found a way to claw our way back. So it just shows a lot of resiliency in the team, I think, to also to go through those situations where we kind of saw those ties as losses, especially early in the year. So, you know, a lot of teams, when they have that many results that don't go their way, they sometimes it's easy to lose that mental resolve. And I think this team kept that, the entire team. So there's a lot of positive to look at that. But it was challenging. I mean, we've never had a season like that. It's definitely a Concordia record. It's definitely a GPAC record.
Yep.
And unofficially, I think it's an NAI record.
I have not
seen anywhere
over
the last few years where that's been more than 9 or actually more than 8. And it seems hard for me to believe that before, when they allowed overtime in regular season, that somebody got to 9 ties, because there was golden goal, there was overtime.
Sure.
It just seems unlikely, because there's another season where we had 8 ties, but it was golden goal overtime, and I think we had many games that finished with somebody winning that match.
And here's a question too. This is something that we were talking about mid-season. So the previous record, I think, was Morningside in 2022.
Yeah, with 7, wasn't it?
They had like 7.
Yeah.
But you can see, like, in recent years, there's been a lot of teams with a lot of ties. Do you think this maybe spurs a rule change or something to maybe less ties in the regular season, something for the GPAC or NAIA to look at?
Yeah, I think there's a chance that over time that maybe college soccer goes back to golden goal. We went away from that last year for postseason, and then this year it came back into play. And it wouldn't surprise me if at some point that gets back into play. The other thing I think that will get changed in terms of rules with those are how the RPI works and how those ratings work, evaluating teams. Those were built pre, possibility for ties without going into overtime and those sort of things. So I think those could be adjusted so that there's probably a little bit more weight given to ties than there was previously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for sure. And I think a big part of all of those ties was the defensive efficiency of this team. You know, a lot of those ties, I think we had 3 in a row where it was a 1-1 score line for 3 games in a row. We had some 0-0s, a lot of 1-1s. I don't think we ever had a 2-2 game. So I think the point is, in a lot of those ties, it wasn't keeping goals out, it was putting them in. Can you just talk about the defensive ability of this team?
Yeah, credit to this team. I think we've had a history of being strong defensively, and I think it's certainly something that we try to make a part of our identity. And that started in the offseason. Last spring, we really focused on the defensive side of the ball, and I think our returners did a great job of that. And it really helped all the new guys this August assimilate very quickly to what we're trying to do defensively. And ultimately, that's not just a goalkeeper. That's not just a back four. That's not just a 6 or holding midfielder. That's our full team. I mean, we really require everybody to put in their shift defensively. And that's, for us, that starts with the front three. And they do a lot of the dirty work for us to have clean sheets, for us to be able to be in a position to not concede many shots, not concede many quality opportunities. Because if you really look at the season, we just don't. It's not just goals. We just there's not a lot of opportunities for our opponent to score, and our goalkeeper sometimes goes the entire game with having to make like a full stretch of a save or something where you're like, wow, our keeper really saved a goal for us. That was an expected goal. So again, that's full team effort in recognizing the cues and how to press and the intensity and commitment to pressing.
I know I've done my fair share of chasing some center backs around for, you know, a good 10, 15 minutes and coming off exhausted after that.
Yeah. But obviously you mentioned it, team effort across the board, especially defensively, but on an individual level, Iker Casanova, defensive player of the year, first team all GPAC. I can kind of relate to him as an offensive lineman in football. You don't get the glory on the stat sheet at the end of the day, but take a moment to recognize guys that maybe don't get like the game-winning goals or they don't show up all the time on the highlight reel, but just what he meant to this squad. Obviously, he got recognized for it after the season with the awards.
Yeah, I was a center back myself, so I can appreciate kind of falling by the wayside in terms of not getting the glory like those like Kai and those guys who score the goals. They get all the glory. Iker has been amazing for us for 5 years, and this year was his best year yet. And I think we've seen that in a few other fifth-year guys. You know, ultimately, you're still getting better as in this time of your life. And he made it a big impact, and he came in with an injury, and we thought it was just going to be like a week or two, and it just kept on going and going and going. And he missed several weeks. I think he missed our first 7 matches. And then came back, and it was just immediate impact. You know, he was a captain for us and a multi-year captain, which he's just been a great leader for the program and a stabilizing force. And you could see it right away, his impact when he came onto the field. And he just calms everybody, his organization, his presence. Some players just have a presence, and I think he had that. And then he helped us in the build and the attack. He made really great decisions moving forward, and helped us be a little bit press resistant when teams were trying to press us. But I think it's his defensive organization and the communication. He was probably by far the best communicator we had on the field and organizer. And he's the guy that just makes everybody else better. And those aren't on a stat sheet. You'll never see that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's in part why he was defensive player of the year. Not just part of that has to do with team success, right? You can never be a defensive player of the year if your team doesn't succeed, because it's stats related, right? He's also not a guy that won defensive player of the year because he scored 7 goals on set plays. He was so valuable to us, though he could have maybe scored a couple goals. We felt so valuable to us to preventing counterattacks on our own set plays that we didn't send him up a lot to help try and score those. So, but I think it's really his leadership off the field that was the biggest impact to us. And that's not something that is going to help him win a defensive player of the year award. It's all those other things, but he had a great season.
I know personally, I can vouch for his amazing leadership and just how he helped the team even while he was injured. You know, those 7 games, he was still on the bench every game. He was giving the most energy. He was even being a fourth coach, if you could say, like helping everyone out on and off the field. But you mentioned he came back after about 7 games, but a big loss that happened to the team after probably about the same amount of time. Carter Hinman, guy, he led the team in goals last year, tied for a program record in game-winning goals in a season.
It was last 5 year. Last year, I think, was the number.
And then, obviously, a huge part of the offense. What does it mean to lose a guy like that and still have the success that we did?
Yeah, that's why ultimately really proud of the team for kind of that next man up mentality. We've had other seasons where we've lost players through injury, and this season was different. We had several injuries. Ocon gets an injury in the first scrimmage of the year. Carter 4 games in injured. Jared Slade, Ryan Wukic. We go down the list. There's a lot of guys who were injured and out. Braden Spath also. But Carter played a really big role last year, and I think coming in, man, he was so excited and ready, and we were excited and ready too, because his breakout season was last year, and we were expecting it to be even higher this year. He really had an ambition to put his name on the record board in other ways, though he's tied for game-winning goals in a season. He wanted that goals in a season on Concordia's record board, and I think he had the ability to do that. And unfortunately, it just didn't happen that way for him, but we were sad to see his career end that way. But other guys stepped up, you know, and we found a way to get those goals. And I think this both shows to your last point about Iker, but also the team kind of coming together, that next man up mentality. I think the first seven games, we struggled to get wins, but we were like one win, two losses, and like four ties. And we had scored 10 goals and we'd conceded 6, I believe. And then the next several games, the next seven games, we went undefeated. We scored 27 goals and we only conceded like 4 goals or 5 goals or something. And it shows both the impact of Iker, but also other guys stepping up when important guys like first team all conference guys like Carter went down.
Yeah,
for sure. And one of those guys who stepped up this year, Martin Herrera, obviously had a season ending injury middle of the way last year. But he really stepped up in a big way to kind of lead the offense in this team. Had amazing games against teams like Midland, scored the game winner in the conference semifinal. Can you just talk about him for a little bit and the impact he has for this team?
Yeah, he's a great impact, as you know. And it's not just his tricky left foot. I think he is the most dynamic dribbler in the league and probably the tightest and sharpest in tight spaces. I mean, he does a few things that I've always dreamed to have the ability to do. And other really good players on our team, I think, dream that they have the ability to do. But he stepped up in goals and his production there. He's always been a good player for us, but this year, his senior year, really was the icing on the cake, so to speak, in that he never had a year like this where he scored as many and assisted as many and was maybe as productive in the attack from a stats standpoint. But he was the guy that I think opponents really keyed on and knew that they had to double down on. You saw that in the conference final. I think Hastings did a really good job of really limiting him to the performance he's had before, because they were just so quick to really double and triple on him at times. But, you know, he can score in many different ways. He can score in the run of play. He can score on counterattacks. He can score on free kicks. He's dynamite on free kicks. And ultimately, he's had a few PK goals too. He just doesn't miss very often on those. And he's just a guy that I think everybody just knows that, oh, well, we always have a chance because he can come up with something special. And he did. You mentioned the Midland game. Midland scores an amazing goal, probably one of the best goals that I think has ever been scored against us. And 30 seconds later, 10 seconds later, whatever it was, we score off the kickoff on an almost equally amazing goal by Martin Herrera and just puts us right back in the game after a bit of a gut punch. So it just shows the importance. He scored some really big goals this season.
Definitely, yeah.
And you, let's zoom out for a bit, because, you know, we mentioned obviously last season Martin got injured, this season Carter got injured, but nevertheless, this is still a very impressive stat. Unbeaten in the regular season against GPAC opponents since 2022, 20-0-10. I know it's hard for coaches to pat themselves on the back, but you know that, I mean, it's a culture thing. Does that speak more maybe to the culture of the team or the talent that's constantly flowing into your program, in your opinion?
I think it's both. I think the culture is probably the bigger piece of that, but no doubt you can't do that without talent. And we really feel like we're always in a phase of reloading rather than rebuilding, and that's no different for this upcoming year. We graduate a lot of seniors, yeah. But we're just going to reload, and we're not focused on rebuilding. But I think it's just a testament to that competitive culture, and that's something we're trying to forge. We talked a lot about that competitive culture this year, and we had some championship culture meetings, and I think this team did a great job of that, because part of a championship culture isn't just evaluating whether you succeeded or you failed, but it's really having self-awareness. It's growing together. It's challenging each other. It's adapting and being flexible, and I think this team was good at that. You know, we would constantly present them with something we needed to improve on, and they would implement it really quickly and effectively. So it's definitely not easy to go undefeated in our league, and I do feel really proud for our program and our players to be able to do that. On the same token, we always feel like there's something a little bit missing, because two undefeated seasons and maybe one loss in 3 years. But we don't have a lot of trophies to show for it. And I think it shows that we're right there. We're millimeters away from being everywhere we want to be. Because I was talking with our coaches. We're really tiny moments away from having 5 championships in 6 years, because we were in position. It was in our hands to win the last 3 regular season titles. And unfortunately, we haven't done that. So it's one of those where we feel really proud about what's been accomplished. There's been amazing things, but ultimately we're striving always for more and trying to take that next step. And we look forward to doing that.
Yeah. So I guess you mentioned in positions to win 5 out of the last 6 titles. What do you think the next step is in order to get there? Is it a culture thing? Is it we just need to be better in those little moments, like those big moments in the game? What do you think will take to that next step and win a title?
Well, that's the $1 million question. So if any of you guys have the answer to that or your listeners do, tell them to send me an email. We'd love that. No, I think ultimately it's all the above. We've got to continue to work on our culture, to cultivate our culture. We've got to continue to bring in talent and ultimately challenge the players that are here even more to grow. And for us to think, okay, it's not just about us doing the exact same thing, just slightly better, but really how can we evaluate ways to be better individually and collectively? And that's us all kind of taking accountability and striving for more. And you know, ultimately, it is about those little moments too, because we have been in those positions. And you know, this year we had, I think, 6 matches where we had the lead and lost it and ended up in a tie. And again, for us, those kind of felt like losses this year. But that, I think that's the point, is in the past, we've been really successful about if we get a lead, we're not going to surrender it. And it's these little things, because if you take those 6 games and put them to the positive, well, we do have a regular season title. We ultimately are in a position to maybe be at large for nationals. So we're right there, and it is these little details.
Definitely. And you talked about, you know, we don't rebuild, we reload. You've got some returning all-conference players in someone like Mike Weivel, an honorable mention, Sean Stratman, who is second team. You got Adrian Wambua coming back. He didn't get necessarily any postseason accolades, but he's been really big over the last 3 years. What are players like that, especially in the back line and leadership roles, going to mean to this team going forward?
Huge. We've had a couple seasons over my 17 years where we've had a really large senior class, and this is probably in the top 2 or 3 of largest senior classes. And in those other years, it's really critical that you have guys that not only on the field with their development, but the leadership, and to take greater roles, because some of these guys, even guys across from me in this podcast, have the capability of growing as a leader. And maybe sometimes that leadership was deferred because there are other great leaders in the room. And why not let these great leaders just take the reins? And now some of these great leaders, like a Martine or Eaker or all these seniors that we've had, that we've discussed, they're not there, and there's no one to look to now except for ourselves. And so I think it's us helping to cultivate that leadership within the team and those leaders we have in the team to help. I think great leaders create other great leaders, and hopefully that's one of the biggest pieces for us continuing to kind of reload, is not just us adding talent, which we will and that has to be done, but it's us developing the leadership within this program to take that next step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we mentioned this, obviously, big senior class, a lot of turnover, and then this constant success in the regular season year over year. Is that something that going forward, like let's say in this offseason going into next season, is that something that you're more hands-on, where you're talking to the juniors, now seniors, about leading the team, or is that just something you're looking for your players to take the reins of and become the new leaders of the team once the old seniors have graduated?
It's probably a little bit of both, to kind of sit on the fence of that answer. Yeah. We certainly are intentional in trying to cultivate that leadership and having some conversations with guys to challenge them to take greater roles, to have bigger voices, to kind of think back to the moments where they felt their biggest voice within a team, right? And a lot of them talk about, well, yeah, it was my senior year of high school, or me within my club team, or whatever else. And we really want to stress for them to feel comfortable and confident to be the best version of themselves as a leader. Also to know that there is no exact carbon copy of what that needs to be. They need to lead within themselves, be authentic in their leadership, and we try to really encourage them to do that. But ultimately, it can't be us just, you know, trying to say we need you to be a leader and challenging them in that. It's them taking ownership in that. It's them challenging each other in how to grow and lead within that. And hopefully they have eyes and ears, and they've paid attention over their time here and learned from other leaders around them. And that's, you know, that's where leaders leave a legacy, is now whether it's Eaker or Gab or any of these other guys that are graduating, leaving, well, hopefully these guys have been taking little pieces of them this whole time. But we are really excited to see who's going to do it. Like, who's stepping up? How are they doing it? In what ways are they going to lead?
For sure. And I'd be remiss if talked about the amazing season we had and didn't mention two guys specifically. Ferdy Hagen, his second year being all-conference first team, and then Nolan Fulberth. Obviously, he's had an amazing last two seasons. Can you just talk about, real quick, the impact that those two guys have had, not just this year, but in previous years?
Yeah, both of those guys have, as you mentioned. Ferdy, I think, made an immediate impact. He didn't start his first couple games, but once he got his chance as a freshman, he really took it. And we haven't had many first-team all-conference freshmen over the years, and so it's a testament to his impact. And especially, he's not a flashy player, right? He's not a guy that's, you know, 19 step-overs and shredding people. It's just his decision-making, his positioning, his competitive nature. And I think that's what really stood out too. We do some competition days, and he has been the last 2 years one of the top guys in our competition days, and just is a guy who just finds a way to win no matter what it is. And then Nolan has been impressive. I mean, he came in, transferred in from a Division I school. We had recruited him before he went to the Division I school, and he came here and succeeded right away, but didn't get playing time right away. We had a really tough goalkeeper battle. We had four guys, and over the years, he's just continued to improve. And we had a great goalkeeper battle this year too, and last year with Gab, and Nolan didn't shy away from that competition. He ended up taking the job and kind of owning it. And he was just so consistent, you know. You just don't look at it and say, oh, this goal was a testament to Nolan and his mistakes. He was really consistent. He's really predictable. He was a really good organizer and communicator for us along the back line. And he was ultimately, he's been the last couple of years in the top, you know, sometimes in the top 10, top 20 in the nation for a lot of stat categories. And I think he's great. He's a guy that, you know, he's probably 5'10". So you'd think the frame of your all conference type keeper and a guy who makes that big of impact is that top 10, top 15 in the nation is usually like a 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", monster. And he's not that, but I think it just shows how good he is if you can do what he does and have the stats he does at 5'10". It just indicates really how good his skill sets are. And he's a guy that has another year of eligibility, and we'll see. We're trying to convince him to stick around for one more year.
Got to offer him some of that NIL money, I guess. You do that now.
Yeah, La Cocina deal or something.
A little brand deal, yeah.
You got one?
That's all I've got.
Well, okay, this is something we did with Coach Olson, and at the end of it, because a lot of, you know, there's a decent amount of people that listen to the podcast. So if you're talking to the prospective recruit out there coming out of high school, with nowadays, we're making jokes about it, but, you know, transferring is crazy. Everyone's going from place to place. Someone who's looking to come to Concordia for men's soccer, what's your sales pitch? What sets this program above the rest?
Yeah, I mean, one, there are a lot of good programs, so it's really hard to sometimes separate yourself amongst every other program. But the things that we really try to lean on would be, one, I really think Concordia is a place that you can have an opportunity to succeed in three areas. In some schools, you can succeed academically, and they're really good. Some athletically, their program or programs are really good. And then some places can help develop someone spiritually. And I think Concordia is the place that has all three. So if someone is looking for all three of those, that they have the opportunity to kind of grow and kind of be challenged or have excellence in all three of those areas. So that's a big one. And then for us, it's really about selling the competitive nature of our program and also the goals and ambitions. You know, that we always are striving for more. It's not just what we've done, but what we want to do. And, you know, I think that excites people to want to be a part of that. And, you know, we're looking for guys who want to be a part of a winning team. And to do that, you've got to know there's going to be competition, and you've got to know that, man, I might not play right away, but I'm willing to work and fight for it and compete for it. So for that, us, it's really, we sell the history a little bit, but I think we sell the future, right? Next year, we want to do more than we did this year. We want to not only just go undefeated in regular season, but to host a trophy, because we've done it before, and I want that for our players, because it's this really fun moment. I don't think there's any things that you can describe what that moment feels like, but it's one of those moments you're just so happy for the players. And I think ultimately we try to spin that and sell that to the recruits, and it's something they want to be a part of.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Kai, do you have any more questions for Coach?
So, God, I think we kind of covered in, I guess, generally and specific terms, pretty much what happened in the season. It was obviously great 17th season for you. Anything else you want to say for the people listening?
No, hey, these guys across are great, so yeah. I look forward to – I haven't really had a chance to listen to the podcast, so I'm going to – but you gained one more fan today.
Yeah, you've got –
check it out on Spotify.
Definitely listen to this episode. I have one thought. This is something I was trying to bump off Kai earlier, because we were, talking about the ties and how do we solve the ties. What's your thoughts on the MLS style of breaking a tie, where it's like the hockey starting from, like, midfield and then running at the keeper? I'm a fan – I just wanted to know what somebody in the industry thinks.
Yeah, the old MLS style shootout. Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, at the time, it was revolutionary. No one had seen it, and it was really exciting. I'm not sure that it's the best way to solve it, but it's entertaining and fun.
Yes,
so, I mean, if the NAI wanted to do that, man, I think we're going to have a few more people in the stands anytime we had a tie. And it would be exciting. There'd be a lot of pressure in those moments.
I'll write some letters.
Here's the question. If you were on the committee voting for it, would you vote yes or no on MLS-style pens?
I think that'd be a hard no, but ultimately it would be fun to see.
Yeah, for sure. Well, on that note, that'll be all for this episode of Talking Dogs. Be sure to stay tuned in the future for a weekly podcast on the CUNY Sower website and on Spotify. From Cohen Carpenter, Kai Ulbrich, and Coach, everybody at the CUNY Sower newspaper, have a good day and go Dogs!